Chapter 2. I'm sorry your stepmom is a nympho. Dealing with mania. It's hard to know where to start with talking about mania, so let's just start with the exciting stuff. Let me tell you the stripper story. Of course, they say that the brain is the biggest erogenous zone, at least for some people anyways. So I'll do my best to paint you a story even wilder than that log jamming flick you love so much. For a little background, by the summer of 2022, I had been married for many years, 17 to be exact, and things weren't exactly going as well as, say, Maud and Jeffrey. My Cynthia, aka my ex at the time, didn't even want me to help her conceive, man. And to quote my favorite show of all time here, not that there's anything wrong with that. But the rationale given, which was that she didn't want to have a bipolar kid, did bother me perhaps a bit more than I let on. I still remember the first time I told someone and they said, "Wow, that's a little shitty." To which I replied, "I mean, maybe, but at least I don't have to have kids." And at the time, I didn't want kids, until I met my one true special lady friend, Jay. Now I'm looking forward to having some little Lebowskis on the way someday. Now, if you just don't want to contribute more to global warming and the constant and devastating depletion of the Earth's natural resources more than you already have by creating a mini-achiever of your own, especially when there are already so many other young children of promise out there, then I would say kudos to you, dude. But the other reason, not wanting to bring another bipolar achiever into the world, is a little shitty, I'd now have to agree. But I decided I needed to take a trip to Bosnia to buy myself a vacation home 1 month in 2022 while I was hypomanic. In hindsight, I can say that perhaps I was even a tiny bit manic. I even remember making a TikTok video at the time that was pretty self-aware, noting that I probably was making impulsive decisions due to the mania. But I told myself that it was under control. My personal spending habits, however, told another tale. I basically bought a ticket to Sarajevo and stayed in Bosnia and Herzegovina for a month and a half. During that time, I was doing a lot of things, as one does when they're manic. What people don't understand about being manic is that you feel like the entire universe is connected and everything is on a single wavelength. Sometimes you get feelings of grandeur and start to think you're the only one who can see that wavelength and operate within that space. It can lead to a confidence that is unmatched, which means you tend to be more outgoing. Personally, I was using that confidence to get places I normally wouldn't exactly be invited to otherwise. I was meeting and interviewing popular artists, such as the turbo folk sensation from Bosnia and Herzegovina, Fazlija, who got even more popular thanks to his TikTok hit, Helicopter Helicopter, and Gigi Jakalic, the so-called Bonham of the Balkans, who introduced the double bass pedal to the former Yugoslavia, and interviewing them on my podcasts. I was meeting with politicians, such as Benjamina Karic, the mayor of Sarajevo, and Serbian television and movie stars, such as Belgrade journalist Nastasija Stošić and her boyfriend, the TV star Pavle Mensur, who were really nice when talking with me at the Sarajevo Film Festival, which I got into with press credentials thanks to my local Discover Dayton podcast. All of that was well and good, and it was a blast meeting those people. I also happened to be mulling over my decision to get a divorce during this time. I remember thinking through it and writing down my rationale. I also texted a friend to see if she would talk with me about my decision and help confirm that I wasn't making it simply due to mania. I still remember where I was during that conversation. I had actually hopped on a plane and flown to Serbia for a day because the first time I had come into Bosnia and Herzegovina, I hadn't gotten some stupid form stamped, and the easiest way to do that was just leave the country and come back. So I went to Belgrade that night and played poker at one of the only casinos I could find that had live Texas Hold'em. After winning enough money to cover the cost of my ticket, I talked with my friend for a long time in that casino, debating whether the decision I was making was simply because I was manic or was actually the right call. In hindsight, the mania definitely played a role in deciding, but in this instance, it was definitely the right call. This is something I've also noticed about mania. Oftentimes you become a different person while you're manic, but sometimes it simply accelerates the things you were already going to eventually do, or it can make you more willing to share things that you've always been thinking but have never been willing to speak up about beforehand. I walked away from that conversation determined to go through with getting the divorce, a decision I can truly say I do not regret in the slightest. As an aside, I think there's a tendency many have to view a marriage that ends in divorce as a failure. I don't. I learned a lot during those years, and I'm grateful for the good times we had together. There are certainly many things that being married kept me from doing that I would have liked to have done, but that doesn't mean I regret it. When it comes to marriage, shit just happens, man. Plus, as someone who is now in an age gap relationship, dating my fiancé at the age I was when I got married would have landed me in prison. There's no point, though, in worrying about what happened in the past, because it will never change. I still think sometimes that it's worth worrying about the future, but really the only time you can do anything about it, anyways, is in the present. So that's where I like to stay whenever possible. But don't misunderstand, I'm not someone who gave up easily on my marriage. We had both been to individual therapists to work through things, and we tried couples therapy multiple times. We always reached the same outcome, however. She was upset with my adherence to a strict drug regimen, while I felt that she was just too uptight, dude. And if you haven't guessed already, dudism is kind of all about not being so uptight. I finally decided that I had traumatized that poor woman enough and that things likely weren't changing, so I reconciled myself with the fact that our marriage had run its course. The shitty part now, and where I start to become an asshole in this story, is when I tell people that your sex drive increases exponentially when you're manic. Meanwhile, I'm a guy living in a foreign country who is becoming increasingly manic and whose libido is going up every day. But I also didn't dare tell her I wanted the divorce, because I believed, although later found out it wasn't true, that she had a power of attorney and the ability to lock me up in the psych ward again, which I really didn't want to happen. And so, rationalizing my actions by telling myself that telling my friend, but not my wife, that I intended to get a divorce was sufficient, I started going to Sarajevo's Soul Strip Club, where I became a known regular. I would walk in and they would start pouring my usual rum and coke, white Russians weren't on the menu, and ushering me over to the women I could ask to go with me for a trip upstairs. Now, I never did the math because I didn't want to know, but I reckon I easily spent upwards of $10,000 over the course of a month and a half on strippers. And I won't lie, I didn't have a bad time. Plus, in my mind, I was saving money. Not at all dissimilar to girl math, as it's known on TikTok, bipolar math is a real thing. Basically, it boils down to having a mindset when you're manic that convinces you that you have unlimited cash reserves and all purchases are warranted. But I also recognized that a U.S. psych ward stay was around $10,000 as well, so if I was going to spend that much money one way or another, I might as well have some fun, right? The problem was that I did, in fact, have, practically speaking, unlimited cash reserves when you consider that I was bumming around in a lesser-traveled Eastern European country that had a very favorable exchange rate with the U.S. As a result, it felt like I was flush with cash, which I thought at the time would never run out. And it didn't, not while I was there at least. In addition to consuming large amounts of alcohol, I was also going to hookah bars all the time, smoking a lot of weed. I counted 6 drug dealers I managed to meet during my short trip, that's a new one each week, plus a little cocaine. LSD was readily available to me as well, I just didn't think it was a good idea. Unfortunately, I couldn't find my favorite drug, mushrooms. So it goes. But all good things must come to an end, and I had to get back home to return to teaching in Dayton before the fall semester started. Once there, I would begin the long and arduous dissolution process. While I was over in Bosnia and Herzegovina, I was able to tell myself that I wasn't cheating because I was just looking, and I would soon be ending my marriage anyways. I also rationalized my behavior by telling myself that I still likely saved money on strippers versus paying for a hospital stay, and it was immensely more fun. I still felt guilty, however, and I timed my return so that I would get back home and then have to leave immediately to go to a podcast conference I had been planning to attend in Dallas, Texas. I'm also an internationally certified transformative mediator, but I can tell you from experience, including that of my own, that mediators are world-class conflict avoiders, and I'm no different in that regard. So I left for the conference without seeing her. Once I got there, it was a great time and super helpful for my own podcasting venture, which is why it's such a bummer that I stopped doing both of my shows for about a year, pretty much right after the conference, of course. But they're back now, finally. While I was attending the conference, I was going to the sessions during the day, interviewing people during the afternoons, and then would go out afterwards for dinner. I even made a friend from the UK who I enjoyed hanging out with regularly. One night, however, I got the itch to go to a strip club again. They're addictive, after all. I googled nearby clubs, found one that looked promising, and called myself a lift. Now, I won't go into the details of that night, but I do remember later discovering that my hotel was next to the JFK assassination site and thinking how it was funny that I could now say that Lee Harvey Oswald wasn't the only one who got some head in Dallas. Terrible joke, I know. But after that night, I really had nothing left to hang my hat on with regard to the whole not cheating lie that I had been telling myself. The truth was, of course, I had begun cheating well before my Dallas visit. I had cheated in Sarajevo, Belgrade, Chicago, Dallas, and Dayton too. This all begs the question, I suppose, of why I'm sharing this openly in a book about bipolar disorder. And I guess for me, at least, the most important reason is that I want to help you understand just how easily you can start to rationalize your shitty behavior when you're manic in a way that could ultimately come back to haunt you. Or it could simply be at odds with how you want to show up in the world. There's a Vonnegut quote from Mother Night I love that goes, "We are what we pretend to be, so we must be careful about what we pretend to be." The simple truth is that I was pretending to be an unmarried man before I was one. More importantly, I was pretending to be one before I had told the person I had pledged to be faithful to for the rest of our lives that I was leaving the marriage. And that's the part that's fucked up and that I would never do to someone again. So I guess I share the story as a warning to let you know that you can do some pretty out-of-character things when you're manic, so you have to be very careful. Which is why I called my friend first to make sure I was doing the right thing with getting the divorce in the first place. And thankfully, it was definitely the right call, because I'm so much happier today with Jay than I ever was in my first marriage, and I can't wait to be married to the right person this time. But of course, manic people do rationalize a lot of things, so here's how I rationalized my behavior to myself. For starters, I was manic. I was ending my marriage, and I had a legitimate reason for not wanting to tell my ex I was leaving the marriage, but also didn't feel particularly bound by its rules anymore. Mostly, that meant that I didn't want her to use my behavior of seeking a divorce or cheating as an excuse for deciding to have me committed. Was I still an asshole for it? Absolutely. Was I likely wrong that this was possible for her to do? In hindsight, probably. Would I do that to anyone else ever again? No, definitely not. But do I regret the experience outside of the whole cheating and spending large sums of money aspect? Not at all, no. Also, for legal reasons, the thing about the blowjobs was just a joke. You see, young Arch grew up in a sexually repressed, conservative, evangelical household. So up to that point, I had had sex with exactly one person, my ex-wife. So it was definitely somewhat liberating, and the only moral problem I feel guilt about is that I did all of it behind her back and wasted so much money on myself. Otherwise, I am of the opinion that strippers provide a very valuable service in keeping lonely men and women and people of all gender identities, really, from feeling so alone, and I think that's something to admire. Hell, I've even dabbled in a little selling of tasteful nudes of myself here and there. Being in the smut industry is work. Logjamming is work. Sex work is work. I just prefer a union shop is all. What else does it feel like to be manic? It's hard to explain, but hyper-energized probably gets the closest for me. You just want to do. You don't care so much what or who you do. You just want to do it, or them, right away, now. And that is hard to sustain. You get very little sleep, though, so you're kind of exhausted all the time. But you also have a lot of reserve energy. You forget to eat because you're just doing, and your brain is moving at a breakneck speed. Everything, and I mean everything, is just a connection waiting to be made to something else. Maybe it's two friends you want to hook up, or two ideas that are very disparate that you somehow find a way to connect, or one fact that you start to couple up with a delusion you have. You want to make all of the connections, and you feel like all the world is one. It's a kind of high, for sure. Another thing that can happen, if things get really bad, is that you can hallucinate, which is kind of scary. I have a number of hallucination stories I could share, but my fiancé has a favorite out of all of the ones I tell. It's the time I thought my friend Aaron was a cat. Don't ask me how or why he became a cat, he just did. And I was sitting in my backyard talking with him while my ex and my mom tried to figure out where the fuck to take me for my second hospitalization. My bipolar story chest is full of little treasures like that one. You also become very trusting when you're manic, which is odd because I, at least, also get very paranoid. But for me, and I've learned that I'm not alone in this, everyone becomes either friend or foe. I trust the friends implicitly, often far too much. There was the time I bought a car from someone who was selling their vehicle on Facebook Marketplace. I showed up and checked it out. It looked good, so I gave him my info, put half down for it, and was going to have him deliver it to my place. Once the check cleared, the dude disappeared. Multiple calls and texts led to the inescapable conclusion that I had been duped, and I was out about $1,500. So it goes. I'll find you, though, David, and I may or may not have found your last place of residence on one of my manic brother Seamus sleuthing missions. I'm closing in. Again, for legal reasons, I kid. There was another time before that, too, in Bosnia, where I bought a Yugo when I thought I was going to be moving there for good. But I couldn't legally own it yet, so I put it in a friend's name. When I decided I wasn't going to be living there, I simply gifted it to her. Legally speaking, of course, she already owned it, so it was the easiest thing to do. But damn, there goes another car, 2 in 1 year, that I essentially paid for and then gave away. Well, maybe you can't give away something you never had, but that's neither here nor there. I was sad to see the Yugo go, though. It was a glorious beacon of Yugoslav communist manufacturing, and I loved it very much. I will always miss it. But you usually can't hold on to all your manic purchases. More on that in a future chapter. So how do I deal with it all? Well, I keep my mind limber with a strict drug regimen, of course. But a lot of it is listening to those around you and listening to them when they say that they are starting to see signs of mania, because often you're the last one to know, unless you're really good at masking, and then sometimes you can fool everyone and yourself. There was one time like that when I was sitting in my office while my ex went and told my boss how I needed to go to the hospital. They actually kicked her out and thought she was the crazy one, even going as far as banning her from my workplace. I checked myself into the hospital later that afternoon, hallucinating and no longer able to register what was real and what was not. The delusions can hit hard, for sure. But I still managed to fool all of my coworkers into thinking I was fine that morning, and that's how mania works. How else do you know when you're manic? You get racing thoughts, your speech speeds way up, you start spending lots of money, you see connections everywhere, and you get a lot of shit done. That last reason is why shows that glorify the worst elements of bipolar, cough cough, Homeland, cough cough, make it seem like manic bipolar people are super productive and should go off their meds to tap into their creativity. In all honesty, the creativity piece remains intact, I've found, and staying on your meds enables you to actually keep up with your ideas and follow through on some of them. So don't go off your meds. I know the struggle is real and all, but just don't. More on that later, too. My advice for making it through mania? Work with a therapist and a psychiatrist to get your mania under control. They make drugs for it now. I have a cocktail that works pretty well for me, and hopefully you can find one that works well for you. But also get someone close to you who you will allow to speak into your life when you're doing too much or throwing your money away, and give them the permission to do so. Make sure to warn them that you might not want to listen, however. And if, by chance, you're someone reading this who is a friend or loved one of someone with bipolar, first of all, thank you. It's hard being friends with us, I know. One coping strategy I've developed over the years is accumulating a lot of friends, although many are really just acquaintances, so that when I do become manic and inevitably need a favor, whether it's picking me up from a bar I had no business being at in the first place, or just listening to my crazy-ass rants, I won't lean on any of them too much. Which is not to say I haven't done that. Some of those people have stuck around, and they're real ones for sure. Others fade away, and that's okay. I get it. I don't know if I could always handle me at my worst either. Secondly, you might want some good advice for helping your friend or family member or significant other through a manic episode. The first, and arguably most important, is this. Don't take anything we say too seriously, and we may say some mean, awful, horrible shit, and it might even be directed towards you. Some of it may have basis in reality, but for the most part, we are unable to control our thoughts or emotions and may even be delusional or hallucinating or both. So you can take everything we say and douse it with the biggest salt shaker you can find. If we have big plans, talk through those with us. Don't minimize them or say it's not possible, but ask us practical questions to help bring us down to earth. Whatever you do, though, don't lie to us, because we'll probably find out, and then we can't trust you anymore. More importantly, we're trying to separate out fact from fiction in our brains, and our brains are already lying to us, so we don't need someone else doing the same thing and making us further question what's real or not. Don't argue or debate with us, though. That's usually not very helpful. Asking leading questions that leave breadcrumbs for us to get back to reality, though? Priceless. Another simple thing you can do is encourage us to eat and drink. The easier the meal is to prepare, the better. And if we're really too far gone, you may have to prepare it for us. But often we simply forget to eat, and that doesn't help anything. Pair that with a lack of sleep, and the clock on us being checked into a psych ward starts ticking faster, like you just cut the wrong wire on a time bomb. Sleep is absolutely critical to bipolar people all the time, but that's especially true when we're manic. Our physiology is such that while manic, we don't think we need as much sleep, and we have a ton of energy and too many ideas to sleep on, literally. We can't stop working on our projects or fixating on some issue that we can't get over. Ask almost any psychiatrist, and they will tell you that sleep is the best medicine for any bipolar person, period. And when we're not sleeping, a quiet and non-stimulating environment is best. Whenever you can get us to chill in front of the TV for a while and do nothing, another bipolar angel up in heaven gets the gift of mood stability. But finally, don't leave us alone. And it's also a good idea to get us to turn off our phones. Avoid letting us hang out with people who tend to feed off of and encourage our impulsive behaviors. And whatever you do, don't let us make large financial decisions. But more on that later. Next up, let's take a look at the flip side of the bipolar spectrum of moods, depression.